showed up in Bozeman about a year and a half ago to an empty lab. Mike and Ian were off traveling the world looking for beetles, and so my job was just to come in and go through our collection and decide what I wanted to work on, and I had really only two choices that Mike gave me, but I decided on one, and yeah, and in the process, I just got to go through all of the West Indian Tanibs, and so today I'm going to share that with you. And most of you were probably at Mike's talk last night, but just to reiterate, the West Indies are those islands that are between North America and South America and are not on the continental shelf, and they include the limestone islands of the Bahamas and Turks and Caicos, the old rocky islands of the Greater Antilles, and the limestone and volcanic and islands of the Lesser Antilles. It excludes Florida, the ABCs, the Venezuelan islands, and Trinidad and Tobago. So what do we know about West Indian Tanibs? Well, in 1984, Marcuse did a catalog of the West Indian Tenebrionids, and he recorded 84 genera and 250 species. And in 1998, he updated this, recording 81 genera and 292 species. After a thorough search of the literature, I found that there are 85 genera and 397 species to date. And while a difference of 105 species sounds like an impressive increase of the known species in the West Indies, there have actually only been 17 newly described species since 1998. And so that just means that Marcuse missed the other 88 species in his catalog. Let's see. And I also counted that there are 595 island records. And what that means is for each species, whatever island it occurs, it gets an island record. So if it occurs on three islands, there's three island records for that species. And this number correlates to about 1.5 island records per species in the West Indies. To get a sense of what we don't know about Tenebrionids in the West Indies, I went through our collection for a second time, and this is going to be things that we've collected, or Mike and others have collected, and but this is all unpublished. So what I found is that there's one described genus that occurs in the West Indies that hasn't been recorded, five described species that are unrecorded, 209 new island records, two or more undescribed genera, and 63 plus undescribed species. So if you're looking for papers to write and publish, you can come to our collection and start describing things. And so we have a lot of things that we have, but it's not out there for people to know about it yet. And hopefully we can get that all done at some point, but we need more people and more people to work on this. So. Some patterns that I noticed of West Indian Tenebrionids are that you have really widespread genera and then endemic species. So 64 of the 85 genera that occur in the West Indies also occur outside of the West Indies, but the opposite trend occurs in the species. 343 of the 397 species are endemic to the West Indies. If you look at Greater Antillean endemism, 67% of the species that occur on Cuba are endemic, 61% are endemic on Hispaniola, 65% in Jamaica, and only 27% in Puerto Rico. But the reason that Puerto Rico is probably so low is because it's really poorly described in the first place, and the things that are not described are generally the endemics. So after looking at that, you can see that there's some trends that West Indian Tenebrionids generally follow. And here's just kind of a table of how we're going to look at the diversity today. So what we have is you have these introduced genera that come from wherever, and you get, they're introduced by the agency of man. And then you have naturally widespread genera that either bring in species that remain widespread, or they produce endemic species, and then you have the endemic genera. So those are kind of the distribution patterns we're going to look at. And then within those, there's kind of these three habitats that they're generally found in, and they're either fungus feeding externally, or the fungus is external, and then the beach, and they're either beach and soil inhabiting, and then they're either found under wood. Oh, and some interesting things to note here are just that the naturally widespread genera don't seem to produce many species that are endemic in this area in the fungus feeders, and then also the widespread species aren't inhabiting the wood. So let's start looking at these. Some examples of introduced species. One is Diaperus maculata, and this is just sort of speculation at this point, but it's found on all of the major port islands in the West Indies, and so we think that maybe it's been introduced. But a definite example is Nitocerus maxillosus, and this species is found throughout the warmer parts of the world and has been introduced into Jamaica and Grenada. And just as a note here, I'm not going to read these distribution lists to you, but anything in blue are new records, and so those are things that I found just in the WIBF. An example of an introduced beach species is Trachycellus aphoideoides, and the first important thing to note about this is that it's not a scarab. Warren suspects that this arrived early in the colonial period, and it's been postulated for other soil insects. And this species can be very abundant. Warren has reported seeing dozens of these beetles in a single handful of sand. Hymenorus ferae is kind of an exception to the Hymenorus rule. Hymenorus are generally naturally widespread with endemic species, but Hymenorus ferae is thought by Warren to be spreading as a weed species throughout the West Indies. And there is also a bit of discrepancy between whether the species is wood inhabiting or beach inhabiting. Warren reports that its larvae are found or possibly found in sandy substrates, but Mike has told me that he's collected it beating and in rotten wood. So those two can battle that out later. A definite example of an introduced wood species is Pelorus cerulonides. According to Halstead, the genus Pelorus appears to be absent from the New World. However, there are a few species that do occur in the New World, but these are always associated with stored food products. And this species is probably of Indo-Malayan origin, but its wide distribution is probably due to commerce. Switching gears to the second distribution category of naturally widespread genera and species, Platydema is a good example of a really widespread genus. In fact, it occurs worldwide. Platydema excavatum and Platydema micans are also both widespread species. Platydema excavatum is easily recognized by its black color, shiny surface, and crenulate head. And Platydema micans is similar to excavatum but lacks the horns or tubercles on the head, and the elytrostriae are almost totally obliterated. According to Triplehorn and Watrous, filaria are found on beaches in many parts of the world. More than 60 species have been described, and catalogs indicate that they occur all over the continents except Australia in the polar regions. Filaria testacea is one of the most variable species of this genus in both size and color, and is also one of the most widely distributed species. Opotrinus is a widespread genus in the New World, occurring in eastern U.S., throughout the Caribbean, and in Central and South America. Evon revised this genus in 1995. From information where this species has been collected, it indicates that in the wild, Opotrinus clathratus occurs on sandy and rocky terrain, on beaches, river banks, in woods, and is widely distributed, throughout the Lesser Antilles. The Jamaica record was an interception in the U.S. with orchids, so it's probably not naturally occurring there. Moving on to the third distribution category of widespread genera with endemic species, Blapsinus is an example of a very widespread genus. However, it has several endemic species in the West Indies, including Blastinus calique, which is endemic to San Salvador. Blastinus calique belongs to a group of closely related species, including Blastinus tetentius, which is endemic to Hispaniola. Dietis is another widespread genus with endemic species in the West Indies. There are currently two described species from the West Indies, Dietis debilis and Dietis guadalupensis. And here you can see that there's several new species, two from Cuba, one from Martinique, and two from Hispaniola. And I actually really like these. The first time I looked at them, I just saw that they're little brown beetles and didn't bother looking at them under a microscope. And then when I was getting ready for this talk, I was looking through them and I was like, oh wow, they have some pretty cool head structures. So they actually turned out to be a lot cooler than I thought. just because the wood inhabiting genera with endemic species are cool, here's another example. Tertius was originally described from Guatemala and Cuba, but is widespread throughout the warmer parts of the world. And these are five new species from Jamaica. Finally, moving into the fourth distribution pattern of endemic genera, the first example is the fungivorous genus Loxosteithes. These are three species. Loxosteithes unicolor is shining black, and Loxosteithes erythrocellus can be distinguished by its large size and distinctive elytra color pattern. It's the only species with half red and half black elytra. Loxosteithes gaudii looks similar to Loxosteithes erythrocellus, but it's much smaller, and the black on the elytra is confined to the apical third of the elytra. An endemic genus that inhabits the beach is Triantoma, and I've talked a lot about Warren's really great work in the West Indies, but from a woman's perspective, just as a note to all of you men out there that are going to name species after your wives or significant others, you should be careful that you don't name the ones that with the wrinkled face after her. So an endemic genus, this is Nodelon, that's endemic to Hispaniola, and there's five species, only one of which is described and or named, I guess. And if you're wondering if you're a really true diehard Tanib fan, the only one that you can admire on the screen is the one on the right. So this leads us into our last endemic wood-inhabiting genus, and the most interesting one, of course. This is Nezocertosoma, the genus that I'm working on for my thesis. And this is Nezocertosoma inflatum, which is endemic to Cuba, and it's the type species of the genus. So we're going to spend a few slides talking about this group. So what is Nezocertosoma? It was first described in 1976 by Marcuzzi as a subgenus of Certosoma, and then in 1989, Doyen raised it to the full genus and added some characters to the diagnosis. The first character is that of the clypeal membrane. In Certosoma, you can see here that the clypeal membrane is exposed, and then in Nezocertosoma here, you can see that it's concealed. The second character that Doyen added is the epipleuron. It starts out really broad and then eventually terminates down here at the fifth abdominal segment. And then the third character is the femora, and it's notched down here towards the apex. So those are kind of the three characters that I've used to bring in some different specimens and put into the group. So currently, this is how the classification of Nezocertosoma sits. There's 10 species in Marcuzzi's subgenus Nezocertosoma, 2 in his subgenus Pachycertosoma, which are the same thing, and there's 5 species in Nezocertosoma, and that's in Doyen's sense, and those 5 species are all fossils. There's Platydema virens with 1 species, and Serrania with 1. Okay, hopefully that will go away. Okay. And then there's 1 in Hesiodus, and I have 19 undescribed species. So the distribution looks a little bit like this. You can see that it's really concentrated in Cuba and Hispaniola. There's one in Puerto Rico and one in the Virgin Islands, and the more I look at those, they're probably actually the same species. And then there's one in Montserrat and one in Guadeloupe and Dominica. And the one in Guadeloupe and Dominica is the same species. So to look at their diversity, there's kind of four different morphological types. The first type is the true Nezocertosoma type, and these are short, really convex beetles. They don't have flight wings, and these are found in Cuba and Hispaniola. Here's six examples of those. The top row is from Cuba, and the bottom row is from Hispaniola. And these two, they look really different in this picture, but I first had them clumped into one species group, and this is Nezocertosoma tumefactum, and this is Nezocertosoma turquinensis. And what's interesting about them is that this one occurs down in the lowlands, and this one's occurring up in the highlands. And this is Nezocertosoma gabini, which is the third described species by Marcuzzi. And this one is probably my favorite of the group, and that's Nezocertosoma new species number 17. So it'll get a name eventually, but I just think that one's really cool, and it's only been collected in Haiti. So the second type is the purple type. That's a pretty scientific name, but these are elongate and slightly convex, and they have winged and wingless forms. And these are big beetles. They're probably like 10 millimeters or so. And these occur on Cuba and Hispaniola. And you just have to trust me here that all of these sort of have a purple tinge on their elytra, but it's hard to see here. The only one that occurs on Cuba is this one, and that's Nezocertosoma parallelis, and the rest of these are occurring on Hispaniola. And these are, I think, a cool group. They've got some diversity in their pronotal shape and stuff like that. And the third type is the Serrania type. These are small beetles. They're ovate to elongate. They are convex-ish, and they have flight wings, and they're occurring in the Greater and the Lesser Antilles. Here's five examples of these. Where's Paul? These are the guys that I'm talking about with you last night. The ones from Hispaniola are the ones that you collected a bunch of, so thanks for that. And two of these are currently described as diaporines, and you probably can't guess which two. But those are Serrania virgula and Platydema virens. And the reason that I kind of got into, like, figured this out was because after the ESA meeting last year, Ian Foley and I drove up to Ohio State and visited the collection, and I saw these Platydema virens, and they were identified by Dr. Triplehorn, and I was thinking, man, those look a lot like the things that I've got back at Montana State. And so I brought them home with me, and sure enough, externally they're pretty much the same thing, but they don't have the external characters of diaporines. They don't have the clypeal membrane, or their clypeal membrane is concealed, and they also don't have this longitudinal ridge on the metatibia. And those are two diagnostic characters of the diaporines. And their internal characters of the genitalia are also not congruent with the diaporines, but I'll show you that in a bit. So the last thing that's interesting about this type is that there's some Dominican amber specimens, and Doyen and Poynere say these are 20 to 40 million years old. That's debatable. I just actually got my hands on the holotypes for these, so I'm excited to look at those when I get back. And now the fourth type, the Hesiodus type. These are slender and elongate, and they're from the Greater and the Lesser Antilles. These are just three examples of those, and this one is interesting because it's found on Cuba and Hispaniola, and for it to be on two different islands is pretty rare in this group, so that's kind of interesting, and I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. So you're probably sitting there thinking that I'm crazy for lumping these things all into one group, but after doing dissections, I found a really interesting synapomorphy that's going to hold this group together, and that's in the female genital tract. So they have this mystery structure right here, and I've talked to Pat about it, and he doesn't know what it is. He's never seen anything like it. Here's another picture of that, and I just want to zoom in here, and you can see that the accessory gland is kind of going through here, and there's, it's not a sclerotized sheath, it's just membranous, it's, but it is rigid, it doesn't, you know, move around or anything. And so this is Nodelon's female genital tract, and what's interesting is that it doesn't have that mystery structure, so you can see that the accessory gland just comes out here without it. And Nodelon has often been thought to be an Azacertosoma's sister, but this is telling me otherwise. So just quickly to wrap up here, this is the same story that you've heard all of the time. There's a lot of diversity that we don't know about, so if we kind of think about this as Nezisertosoma are pretty big beetles, they're going to be easily collected. There's 19 described species, there's 19 undescribed, so there's a potential of 100% increase. And then there's these little things, Archaeoglenes, which are not going to be collected as often, and they have one described species and five undescribed, so you can have up to a 500% increase in the species. So just here's a quick graph. This is what we know, or this is what's been reported. And then we can have anywhere from 800 to like over 2,000 species that we don't know about. So from 397 up to 2,000, there's a lot of diversity out there. So if any of you are going to the West Indies, look for Tenebrionids, and you can even take me with you because I haven't got to go yet. So just thanks to these people for all their help.